This podcast is brought to you by Rock My Wedding, the UK's most influential wedding brand. Hello, 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 and welcome to Rock My Wedding, the podcast. It's just me for this first part. Becky, hi everyone. Hope you're all well. Because I am going to play for you a conversation that I had last week with Cecilina Thornburg, who is a wedding photographer, excellent wedding photographer at that. But we didn't talk about wedding photography, as you might expect us to have. What we talked about was feminism. And can you have a feminist wedding? Is there such a thing as a feminist wedding? We talked about traditions. We talked about making your own traditions. We talked about money. We talked about bridezilla, which we're not here for. It was a really interesting topic of conversation, really great chat. Cecilina is also a COVID bride, so you get to hear a little bit about her experience of planning and postponing and rearranging her own wedding. And there is a little bit of chat about wedding photography, but not much. We really focused on the feminism aspect of the chat. I caught up with her on Zoom last week. She's recording in her home. I was recording in mine. So sorry if you hear a dog bark or a bell ring. But yes, I hope you enjoy it. It's a good one. So get comfy, grab a cup of tea or your favourite chocolate snack and enjoy. And I'll be back at the end of the episode for a little bit more chat. See you then. Really, really great to have you. We've spoken so much that it's really great to finally see you, and it's nice to do it on Zoom as well, so I actually get to speak to you, yes. Get off the email. Tell me a little bit about your own wedding, because you're a COVID bride. So what's going on with you? Are you postponing? Are you going ahead? Where are you at?
Yes, I am a COVID bride and a wedding photographer, so it just my worlds collided. We were meant to get married in May 2020 for 4 days in a chateau in France.
Oh my gosh, keep going.
Yeah, it became quite clear by mid-March that wasn't going to happen. So we had we were offered to put it back to September 2020, but then we thought, let's do it a year. And if it was really tough, had some family members who were ill as well, so it was the sort of the urgency of having the wedding, everyone was there and well enough.
Yeah.
But we postponed it an entire year. So It is due to happen, fingers crossed.
Everything crossed.
This May, 3rd to 7th of May. In France, with guests from the UK and Sweden, where I'm from.
Amazing. So it's the same venue, same plans, all of that. And
yeah, everything was planned already by March last year. So we haven't really done anything with it. My wedding dress is packed away, unfortunately.
Yeah, you still love it though. You're gonna unpack her and get her on and feel fabulous.
I will. I'm looking forward to the day when I can confidently say it's going to happen in May. Then it's very hard now, you know, the balance of getting excited again and then with the potential of maybe having to postpone
I mean, all the positive thoughts, all the positive vibes, all the fingers, toes, everything crossed that we can.
I
desperately can't wait to see it. How did you go about? I was talking to Lauren about this in the last episode, because she got married in November and she's a wedding photographer same as you, and it was really interesting to me to find out how she chose her wedding photographer, because obviously you know, you're surrounded by so many incredibly talented people, aren't you? And you know,
I think because it was hard because I know so many fantastic photographers and
I mean,
I do mostly destination weddings out in Europe. So for me, it was quite clear I could choose anyone from the entire world to have fly out. So I didn't have a limited pool to choose from, but it was really important for us to get that human connection, someone who's really good at photographing people, making our families comfortable, making me comfortable, because I hate having my picture taken.
It's like having the same conversation with Lauren, like all
is
of
it?
These were these were all of her prime key things that she was looking for too. I think that extends for everybody, doesn't it? Those are the things you should be looking for.
Because we can, I mean, I recommend all my couples that it's, or not my couples, but all couples, to connect with whoever is photographing their wedding, all their suppliers, obviously. So I did find a fantastic photographer in Australia that we booked.
Okay. Oh, brilliant.
Fantastic. But now, obviously, with Australia's COVID policy, just also making me a bit nervous. But things to come, we're staying positive, and it's going to happen at some point.
It will. It will. Yeah. It will be incredible when it does. But so weirdly, you're not here to talk to us about photography today, although you have featured a lot of times on Rock My Wedding. So I'll make sure in the podcast show notes that go along with this episode that I link to some of those so everyone can see your fantastic work.
Thank you.
But you are here to talk to us today about how to plan a more feminist wedding.
Yes.
A subject very close to your heart, right?
Yeah, it is very close to my heart, having grown up in Sweden. I just think it's a topic, because when we started planning our wedding, there were a lot of questions that came up for me. And obviously,
did you have to ask the questions, or these are questions that hadn't dawned on you until you started your planning process?
Many things came up, but obviously, even before, I wasn't sure. I mean, for a long time, I didn't want to get married. I just didn't think it was anything for me. And then I accidentally photographed a wedding about a decade ago, fell madly in love, and I just realized what it's about, having family together and celebrating that love. So then the wedding became really important, the gathering of the family. But the marriage bit, I wasn't sure about. So I think planning the wedding, there are a lot of things that came up, and I thought, if I'm having these thoughts, I'm sure a lot of other people are having them as well, which is why our conversation started, and we thought, oh, this might be an interesting thing to
bring along. And I think that, I know you've mentioned to me before that these days we are all, hopefully most of us, fighting for equality in society, and that can start in your marriage, and you know that's the way we change things, isn't it? We have to change things for ourselves for society to be able to change as a whole. So what are those questions that came up for you that really stand out about when you started planning your wedding?
Well, so I think there were a lot of conflicting emotions and thoughts, because I mean, my first thought was, is there such a thing as a feminist wedding? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, marriage, weddings, it used to be about stability of society, but it was also an economic imposition upon women. So, but obviously for us today and the couples I photograph, it's so much more. It's about love, it's about celebration, it's about family. So how do we, you know, excuse the pun, marry the two?
Yeah.
And I really don't think there were many traditions, obviously being in the wedding industry, I know about a lot of the traditions that I found troubling.
Yeah,
surrounding weddings, and also the pressure that I could see from a lot of my couples, and I think that I myself felt as well.
But to follow through with those traditions.
Yeah, because I think you can feel like you're missing out on some of the emotion if you don't follow the tradition, because they give us a framework that's really important. It frames our emotions, it frames our expectations of the day. So a lot of them are important, but I could also identify quite a few that I didn't think, this does not represent me as a woman, and this doesn't represent us as a couple going forward, and especially on the first day as married. For instance, the asking the father's permission to marry, you know, comes back to the possession, the woman assuming to change her last name, the bride's parents paying, you know, modern day dowry.
Yeah.
The bouquet toss.
Yeah.
You know, single women's, you know.
It's
going to be me. You know, biggest goal in life is to get married. There are many, so.
Yeah, and I think they're probably some of the most obvious ones you point out there. And it's interesting as you talk about them, because I can really relate to them, because most of them I did in my own wedding. But it's very interesting. I mean, I was a lot younger when I got married, and perhaps at that point wasn't aware as much about feminism as I am now. And perhaps my perspective on those things would be slightly different. But also, when I look back, I don't think about the way I incorporated those traditions into my day as in a sense of actually following what the traditions were. So I know that my husband spoke to my family about asking me to marry, mainly because he wanted to hatch a plan and needed everybody's like in on it. It was, you know, it was more of a less of a permission asking, but more of a I'm going to ask Beck to marry me, and I would really, really like you to help me do that, which I think is really, really nice. And that they were all really involved in that. And then my dad walked me down the aisle. But again, it wasn't a sense of him giving me away. It was more of a moment for the two of us. So we went to the venue together, like we sat and we chatted together in the car to get to the venue, and then he gave me away, and it was just like our moment.
Oh, that's
and
lovely.
Kind of a, you know, like a, yeah. I kind of felt like it was more me saying thank you for everything you've done. I feel like the burden of me is not on you anymore. Sort of kind of flipped around a little bit. But and I guess my point of all that waffle is that the traditions obviously are steeped in a lot of this kind of, you know, it's not great for women, the history of weddings, but you can make them what you want today.
Absolutely.
And carve your own traditions out of them and make them mean something to you, I guess.
Yeah, and I think an important point to make is that when we talk about a feminist wedding, we're talking about equality.
100%.
This is not about, you know, doing something for the women. It's to break away those traditions that we don't feel comfortable with, for anyone not being forced to do anything or partake in anything that they don't like. So yeah. I think it's more about having a conversation about what's important to you, what's important to me. It's not about, you know, looking at the old traditions and then shunning them. I think it's about making choices that are your own. And then because you've thought about it and you've made the decision, you might feel comfortable. And, you know, the day is about having fun. There shouldn't be any expectations or any stress that you don't.
And it's really about starting your marriage the way that you intend for it to continue as well, isn't it? On that equal playing field. Like we've talked about this before when we talked about how to write a bride speech and the reasons why you should do a bride speech, you know, start level pegged, you both get to have your say.
Yes.
You know, it really is about leveling up that equality. And I think the same goes for, you mentioned about taking the man's surname and it really, you shouldn't be entering into that marriage if you're expected to take a name that you don't want to. Like, you know, it should be on your agreed terms with your other half.
And that's why we have to have these conversations.
Yeah.
I think to talk, because it's such an amazing thing to plan together, and I think you get to know each other a lot. So it's really interesting to have these conversations with my fiance about, you know, what do you want to do? What do I want to do? What's really important? And then separating what was expected of us, or what we thought was expected of us, with how we actually wanted to do it. And that was a really fun process, actually, to get to know. I'm having a speech because I think it's important to have my voice heard. He doesn't, because he doesn't like it. So, and then anyone can speak.
That's called an interesting twist on it, isn't it? Like, if he's not going to say anything but you are, like, brilliant, love that. And it's that, I always think that thing about speeches is you shouldn't feel like you have to say something just because you should. Like,
exactly.
And if you are an absolute bag of ball of nerves about standing up and speaking in front of people, you then just spend the whole day up until that point feeling sick. Like, I've been to so many weddings where I've seen grooms just literally look physically sick.
Yeah.
And all they've been able to think about, they've done their vows and they've done that, but past that point, all they've thought about is, oh my gosh, I've got to do a speech. Yeah. I've got to go and do that speech. How am I going to do that? And it just seems such a shame to put that pressure on somebody.
Exactly. And I think there's a lot of invisible pressure. Mm. For instance, I went dress shopping. I went dress shopping eventually with my mum and my sister, and I realised they were really nervous about it because they thought I was going to make them wear a dress. They do not wear dresses. They're not dress people. They didn't tell me anything because they just thought,
Oh, bless them.
I'm the bride. I have the say. But when I understood that, we went out shopping together then, and we found some fabulous pantsuits for them that they absolutely love and feel cool in. But I just thought, here's one thing that's come up that I didn't realize. So there are things underlying that is,
and that's very interesting, isn't it? Because that's outside of your and your fiancé's relationship. It's extending to other members of your party and your family and your wider group, and having to consider that, they've assumed they must wear a dress because they have this role in the wedding, when actually...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it goes for everyone and all the friends and how they, you expect to partake in the day and how the bridesmaids are expected maybe to coo and swoon when the bride walks out in her dress. And, there are many layers of things. So I think just having open conversations about it with everyone and then, just having a bit of fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that open conversation thing is very key, isn't it? And I wonder how easy it is to speak, because I didn't have any of this with my experience of my wedding planning, but I wonder how easy it is to speak with members of your family who have that expectation that you will do this tradition or you will follow this tradition. Have you had to do that? Have you had to say to family members, like, we're actually not going to be doing that, we're going to be doing this? And was that met with... agreeance or questioning? Or
I think it might be a little bit more, it might be different for us because we're also older now,
right?
We're mid-30s, so I think when we planned the wedding, it was we just sort of did it as we thought.
Sure.
So we haven't had anything from our families, things that they will have expected anyway. And also because we come from two cultures, maybe there's I'm from Sweden, so I've got my Swedish lot, and he's English, so he's got his traditions. So we've had to marry some of that anyway, looking at, what do we want to incorporate from Sweden and from England, and how do we do things? Surprising things that came up as well. I wasn't very bothered about not seeing each other before the ceremony.
Right.
Because, wedding photographer, I'm like, it's a great time to do portraits before the ceremony. Yeah. But then I realized as we were having conversations that he would prefer not to see me before. So then you're like, that's an interesting thing. It's, again, it comes back to conversation about what holds meaning for you.
So, and that's nice, isn't it? Because obviously that surprise in seeing you for the first time, that's obviously holds a lot of meaning for him, which is really nice. So what traditions are you including, or traditions that you're using but that you've kind of tweaked to make your own?
So
both Swedish and English. I'm fascinated to hear about the Swedish traditions.
One Swedish thing I love, which anyone is more than welcome to steal because I think it's great, is that is that the bride and the groom, or the groom and a groom and a bride, walk down the aisle together.
Brilliant.
To signify that you are stepping into the marriage willingly and together. In a lot of churches, a lot of priests in Sweden won't allow you to do the, man up at the altar and the woman walking down, because you have that tradition. So that's all well and good, but I wanted to walk and he wanted to stand up there. I'm not going to be given away, so I'm just going to walk by myself, which is in itself terrifying because I'm sure I'm going to trip and fall.
Hey, listen, you won't. You'll be so focused on him, you'll literally float down there, I'm telling you.
Oh, God, I'm getting really excited now that we're talking about it. I'm getting really excited about it again.
It's interesting because we find, I don't want to ruin your train of thought, but we find that more people are altering that way of making their entrance, if you will. We are seeing more people walking themselves. We are seeing more people walking with an alternative to a parent as well, whether that's because the parent isn't here anymore or just because they want to do it a different way. And we're also seeing, especially in a lot of same-sex weddings that we share, the couple walking together You know, we had a post from a guy called Will Farmer who wrote about his experience planning as a gay couple during COVID. And he was sort of explaining, you know, we've decided that we're going to walk down the aisle together because there's no hierarchy in their relationship. So they feel like that's the right way for them to enter into their marriage, which I thought was really, really lovely. A great way to really kickstart what hopefully will be the rest of their lives.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I just stopped his train of thought there. So we were talking about what traditions you were going to include in yours, including the Swedish ones, and you're kind of going against Swedish tradition and doing the thing of he's going to be waiting for you and you're going to walk down.
Yeah. So that was important for him as well. I think obviously the speeches, we don't want to give anyone any particular roles that they don't feel comfortable with. The proposal was, I guess, a big thing. The fact that I didn't feel comfortable being proposed to.
Right.
I mean, I remember like a decade ago when my girlfriend got proposed to, and, you know, we were ecstatic and we were crying and so happy. And she said, "I can't believe he's chosen me to be with him for the rest of his life." Oh. And that was such a wonderful thing.
So lovely.
It was gorgeous. But now at this stage, we just thought, I mean, there's no surprise to me that, you know, Louis wants to be with me and me with him. So for him to craft a surprise proposal, it just didn't feel like us at this stage of our lives.
So
we just found a venue, picked it, and then went off to design the rings together, which was such a lovely thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think I felt, and I heard from a lot of my girlfriends around the same time or this decade, when it's come to this question, there's a lot of people who are afraid of missing out, you know, out on that emotion. You know, you see those fantastic proposals on Instagram and everyone's crying. And but this was such a lovely alternative. And I wanted to actually let that be heard as well, that this thing that we did together, and we drank champagne and we designed the rings, and we went off for a lovely curry together. So it was, you know, you can craft other traditions that are like yours and that feel like you at this stage of your lives.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds so great. My brother-in-law recently sort of half proposed to who will be my sister-in-law, which is so exciting. Very, very excited for her to go through the whole process, and they're hoping to get married in April. But theirs was much of they're a little bit older as well, and it was much more of a, like, it feels like the right thing to do. You know, so why don't we do it together? And they went shopping for the ring and decided on how it should be and all of that together, and they really enjoyed that. So I think there's definitely pros to both ways of doing it, isn't there? And if it comes as a surprise, then woo, it's come as a surprise.
Yes, but yeah.
Like, you know, it is a lovely thing that you can do together and start that whole process kind of as you mean to go on, that you're both in it together. Because I think often, and I don't think I'm mistaken in saying this, that the proposal happens and it's a big thing that's geared up and kind of led by whoever is the proposer, if it's the, you know, sort of groom bride situation. But then post that, a lot of the stuff is then thrown back onto the woman to organize.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I know that you've talked about Deborah Francis White saying
yes,
that actually weddings are very feminist, because this is where we get to show what we're made of. We can arrange this entire event and do this and do that. But that in itself has its own consequences, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think it's so interesting that if she says weddings are inherently feminist, because it's, you know, if you're as a woman being disempowered throughout society, it's a one day where we have the power to decide on everything and we have the power of the budget. But I think this can, I can see a lot of pressure on brides, some of my past couples, where, you know, the bride is expected to be passionate about all the things and have an opinion, and obviously a woman with a voice might not always be seen as you know. Yeah. Don't be a difficult woman. You know, women behaving assertively are usually a thing to despise, and you might be seen as high maintenance and unreasonable. So I think it's, I think a lot of women might, as they are becoming brides, having those thoughts on how to thread, you know, how much do I say, how much do I have to say, how much, and then obviously involving the other party. Especially if that's a man, what are the expectations on him? It might be to have to hold a speech, or to pay for a ring, or to choose a ring that, you know, she will love for the rest of her life. So I mean, there's nothing wrong with these beautiful traditions of romance and showing up for each other and making each other feel special. And there's obviously a lot of anticipation around it. So I think if you want to be proposed to, you know, you should. But it's, again, about talking with your partner about what do we expect from this marriage and from this wedding, and how what am I comfortable with and what am I not, and how do we want to go about it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And it's that, it's the role sharing, isn't it? It's like you were saying right at the start, it's the feminism in weddings is not about elevating the woman above the man. It's making sure that everyone's got an equal share in what they're doing. And I think that sometimes society has perpetuated that crazy bride thing with the whole bridezilla tag.
Yes.
Because actually women have felt a pressure that they should take on everything, you know, to do with it, because it's what we should be doing. And then therefore they get stressed, and then they're given the tag of bridezilla, and then they just think, oh my God, was it even worth it? All the stress.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, the equality thing is really essential, I think, for making sure that, we've said before, you start your marriage on the way that you intend for it to carry on. And also so that you just alleviate some pressure from yourself as a woman who is expected to be the organizer and sorter out of all of these things.
Yeah.
You know, that it isn't on you to do it all. It should be fair and it should be equal. And that's, I guess that goes with not just bride and groom weddings, but also groom and bride and bride weddings.
Oh, you know,
absolutely. That split, the whole feminism thing kind of falls out of whack a bit there, because it's really about equal sharing. Yeah, full stop. So yeah, it really does span So let's just go back a little bit. When we talked previously about a few of the typical traditions that people tend to fall into, so the being given away, the asking for permission to marry, and you did mention about like a modern day dowry, kind of the bride's family footing, if not all, some of the bill of the wedding.
Yeah, and I think for a relationship, it's one of the most important thing to have conversations about is the, you know,
money. No one ever talks about it ever enough anywhere.
Exactly.
And you are 100% right. I think it's one of the things that can cause great rifts in relationships if, you know, that is not clear and transparent. And obviously your marriage is starting here and money is a big thing when it comes to getting married. I mean, it obviously doesn't have to be, because you spend what you have, but we do know people are spending £50,000-£60,000 on weddings. So
exactly. And I mean, it's the having a wedding sort of catapults you straight into that question of how much is this, how much do we have to spend, how much do we want to spend, how do we want to do it. So just being comfortable with who is paying, I think, is important. Whether you are getting contributions from parents maybe, or if you decide to pay for it yourselves, if you're splitting it 50-50, or if you're doing it some other sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, looking at other expectations that come with money, if you've got them from a parent maybe, they might
absolutely. It's what is the expectation for your contribution to our wedding day?
Yeah.
We've talked about this in another episode before.
Okay.
I think it must have been about a budgeting episode, but it's so crucial to lay your cards out on the table.
Yeah.
You know, if you are having family contribute, what does that mean? Or what do they think that means for them? Do they think that means they could have a section of the guest list that's theirs?
Yeah.
You know, does that mean they get to choose what food you have? Like, what do they think that means for them?
Exactly. It's such an important thing to do, to talk about, to get things started off right and not to get into debt that you're not comfortable with, or to, you know, as you say, obviously you don't have to spend. A wedding is a luxury.
Oh,
it's a luxury 100%. Event. Yeah. You know, it's not totally essential. You could do it if you wanted to without spending lots of money. But again, it comes down to expectations and traditions. And, you know, I had a friend whose mother-in-law really needed, she was passionate about them having a wedding car, even though it was only, no one would see it.
She sounds like my mum. My mum was exactly the same. Well, you've got to have a car.
Have to have a car, yeah.
Who's going to see the car? Well, we'll make sure we get a photo with the car.
Yes. The photo. So, you know, so it's, again, it's about talking to why the family and what's important to them, because you want everyone to have a great time and to...
you do. And a part of your wedding is for, or at least for me, it was saying thank you to everybody. This is an opportunity to get those people here and feed them and make them laugh and entertain them and say thank you for everything that you've always done. Or, you know, that's such a big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And getting that
the whole experience for your guests, you know, for me, it comes down to everything that I photograph at the wedding that I want them to remember, you know, the experience of sitting down at that beautiful table. What did the flowers smell like? What was the texture of the dress and the light and the emotion in the room when you sat there? There's so many beautiful things that happens, and the experience that we want to create for our guests and our family and ourselves, obviously. But it does come down to these traditions and the expectations and the structure. And I think it's important for everyone that you don't have to do it if you don't want to. Just pick and choose your favorite traditions and
absolutely. And I'm kind of hopeful that if anything has come out of this whole COVID experience for people who are planning a wedding, is that, you know, we were saying previously that really a wedding is a luxury. And it doesn't have to cut, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money, which we've seen with these much, much more scaled down weddings where we have had 30 guests or 15 guests or 6 guests or whatever the numbers ended up being. And if it's a case of there is a pressure for you to take like monetary contributions from your family, but that's going to impact your ability to have the day that you want and follow the traditions that you want, then you don't need to do that to have that day. You can scale back, make it more affordable for yourself. So if you're able to scale back, which means you can afford to have your day yourself, then that might be an option to remove any of those like pressures you feel having had monetary contributions from family members. I think it's a thought at least worth considering.
Yeah. And that feeling of control, I think that's really important. And, you know, crafting a celebration that's truly yours, that you feel comfortable with and that you love and that you're really excited about, because that's what it's all about, just having fun and celebrating.
It really is, isn't it? And I think that's when you find people enjoy the wedding planning the most, because they can be excited about it because it's their day, their way, like literally everything that we always say. That's when you're going to enjoy it more than ever. And I think that to round up what we've talked about is think about the traditions, both from, you know, like you having a multicultural wedding. So you've got two sets of traditions to think about there. It's talking about them. What are they? What do they mean? Do they mean anything to us? What can we use from them that we really like? We don't need to discard everything, but we love that element. Perhaps we could use that and mix it with this element from this and make our own traditions, start our own marriage the way that we want it to continue. And I think that's really key. And I'm hopeful that that will give the listeners a lot of food for thought about how their day feels, because we talk about this a lot as well. It's the aesthetic is really important to a lot of people, and they want it to look a certain way. And we talk a lot about set this Pinterest board up and, you know, save these cakes and you this blah 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 and these flowers and that flowers, but ultimately the day comes down to, or should come down to, how you want it to feel. Like, what emotion do you want your day to evoke? And a lot of how it feels is kind of found in those little things that you do, the way you walk in? Do you walk by yourself? Because as soon as you start walking in by yourself, yeah, you know, like for me, I would be like, oh, here we go. Like, yeah, this is, she means business. It does, those decisions really, really impact how your day feels and how it makes your guests feel as well.
It's so important that you are enjoying the wedding day. And I do recognize a lot of the pressure from my work as a wedding photographer on the day, that you want to craft these moments that you might have seen in other photography before, because there's a lot of beautiful work published online, and we have more of an insight into how weddings look and feel and the style, obviously, than we did have 20 years ago. So a lot of this, you know, I sometimes get these pages of must-have shots, for example, the shot over the shoulder of the bride as groom wiping away a tear when he sees her for the first time. And I've actually got that one. And I can understand it, because you've seen it and you want to feel that emotion, but you can't craft that.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, you can't craft it. It might not happen. And if you are looking for those specific moments in your wedding day, you might miss other things that are really genuine. So
interesting. I hadn't even thought about the concept of people thinking, I need that shot. And that shot is actually someone else's emotional response to something that you might not necessarily have.
Yeah.
Not even considered that.
Because you obviously, if you walk down the aisle, we've seen these amazing videos on Instagram, and the groom is tearing up, and you think, oh, I want that emotion, because you are going to get that emotion. It might not look exactly like that. So
that's right. It's in your own way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, if you have a partner that doesn't normally break down in tears, they might not do that, or they might surprise you, and that might be the beautiful moment.
Yeah.
Or you might share something else that's special to you. But I think it will put pressure on brides and grooms and maybe the family if you're expected to act in a certain way or to, you know, to fulfill those moments. Because I tell you, every wedding I shoot, there are so many fantastic moments and glimpses of emotion that happen naturally without us having to, you know, happen when, you know, we set up the bride and then the father is walking through the door. There might be other things. So, you know, as a photographer, we are always looking for those emotions. Yeah. So that
It might be that tear doesn't come as someone walks down the aisle, but actually it's found in a really quiet moment that groom has by himself 20 minutes later or whatever. It's not, I hadn't even thought about that.
Or you know, a hand on the shoulder or a touch of you know, and, you know, we look for those moments and those relationships that happen. And that's not just the, you know, between the couple getting married. It's obviously the entire family. It might be a friend, or it might be, you know, a friend group on the dance floor that haven't seen each other for a decade and they're all together. I mean, there's so much of it. So I think if I were to give any advice about taking the pressure off of yourself, is to just go back into yourself and think, what's important to us? And as you say, what's important for us to feel? And then try not to get into that pressure on the day of things playing out as you have seen it in other people's weddings.
Oh, I think that is such amazing advice. So a great place for us to finish.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for having me over here,
an absolute pleasure, because it's such an interesting topic, and I think it's really important, and I think there'll be many more follow-ups to this conversation as well. The community is so vocal, so it would be really, really great to hear what they think as well.
I'm
really looking forward to everyone listening to it.
And let's hope 2021 will be a comeback.
And we'll be keeping our fingers
all
crossed for May, for you in France,
thank you,
and with the Australian photographer.
yes thank you so much.
There you have it. Thanks so much again to Cecilina for joining us. And please make sure you check out the show notes once you've finished listening to me close off the episode, because there will be links there to weddings of Cecilina's that we've featured in the past. So you can have a look at what she does and what she does so well. And there will also be links to other articles that are related to the topic that we've been talking about. So, for example, there'll be links there to how to write a bride speech or how to write a speech in general, vows and traditions, all those sorts of things. There'll be lots of links to other useful articles. So please go and check them out. And whilst you're there, you can have a browse of all the other show notes as well for anything that's relevant to your planning journey, wherever you might be in it at the minute. If you enjoyed the episode and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it would be great if you would give us a little 5-star rating and leave a little review if you've got a couple of minutes. It's just not selfishly for our own massive egos, but it really genuinely helps other people find us when they're searching for wedding podcasts. So if you've got a spare minute, that would be much appreciated. And hopefully you're all safe and well, and I'll be back in your ears in 2 weeks' time with a brand new episode. So take care. Until then, see you soon. This podcast was brought to you by Becky from Rock My Wedding, the UK's most influential wedding brand. For more content, visit rockmywedding.co.uk, follow us on Instagram at Rock My Wedding, or buy the book Your Day Your Way from Amazon or any leading book retailer. This podcast is produced by We Are The Clarks.